We haven't got an interviewer to interview us, so we thought probably the best thing to do was to just ask you guys if there's things you want to ask us about the magazine or anything else. It doesn't have to be about the magazine, but presumably that's the obvious thing to ask us about.
Otherwise, can we start off just by asking, what's a typical day in the life of a Doctor Who magazine editor? Take me through a typical day.
Oh, wow, okay. Well, now I live in Tunbridge Wells, I only have a 10-minute walk to the office, so I can afford to lie in a bit longer. So, generally, my day begins with thinking, oh, God, I've got to get up and go to work. And then feeling quite happy I got to go to work.
Good.
Because I get to see Peter and I get to work on Doctor Who magazine. And then, so we'll get into the office and we'll go through all the emails and start working out whether we have to do anything urgently, whether there are any complaints, whether there's anything that needs to be sorted out there and then. But it's not, there isn't a typical day, really, is there?
There isn't a typical day. That's the best answer.
The real answer is that because every day is different and because a magazine takes 4 weeks to do and then we're always planning ahead and so on, you know, every day throws up new challenges.
But there's different sort of gears we go through during the cycle, aren't there?
Yeah.
I mean, once we finish the magazine, the start of a new four-weekly cycle, it sort of starts off in first gear and then starts to get busier and busier as the weeks progress.
That's right. Well, I mean, because of course we've recently had our 500th this year, and that was one which we were planning probably a year ahead. So, you know, we're always sort of, you know, we're not just working on one issue, finishing, and then starting the next one from scratch. We're always having to work quite a long way ahead. So with something like the 500th, you know, which was on the horizon for, you know, at least a year beforehand, I was thinking we got that 500th issue on the way. So we knew that we wanted to do the cover with recreating the very first issue cover. I don't know if everyone here saw that, but that was an idea we wanted to do to get Peter Capaldi to recreate the cover of Tom Baker from issue one. But of course, once you have that, you think, we can't do that the week before the magazine comes out. We're going to have to get that planned in good time. So that was something where we had to...
months in advance.
Quite a long time in advance. It was well before Christmas, and the magazine came out in
May.
But should we ask if people want to ask us specific, because rather than just us drone on about whatever...
Oh yeah.
Hi.
Well, you've been there quite a long time now, haven't you?
Yeah, well, quite a while, yeah.
I noticed recent issues, something I like, you've been kind of quite experimental in so much as you've had a dedicated Tom Baker issue and similar with Peter Davison. Is that something we can expect to see more of?
Yes. I mean, one of the things you always want to do, is particularly once you've gone over 500 issues, is you're always trying to do something a bit different. You don't want to just try and do the same things over and over. So, and I was also very aware that you know, with that 500, if you wanted to make sure that this is the start of another, hopefully a good run of magazines. So with the Tom Baker one, it was part of the sort of celebrations in a way that we knew we wanted to do a really big, the definitive interview with Tom Baker, if you like, and given that he's been interviewed many times in the past, you know, you're sort of setting yourself a real challenge to do that. But of course, that couldn't just be the 500th issue, because you want to have lots of things in that, so that's why, you know, it was always like we were continuing that on. And then, of course, with Peter Davison, I think he saw the Tom Baker interview and thought, well, yeah, anything Tom can do. And of course, he had his autobiography coming out imminently, so it was kind of perfectly timed for that. But I think when you're talking with actors and writers and people you've spoken to lots of times before, there's always that challenge, isn't there, to try and do something new with them rather than asking the same questions and doing things.
I think we're very well aware that a lot of our readers have been there since issue one, which is, 37 years now?
Yeah, well, I mean, even if not issue one, you know, people might have been there for 20 years, you know, or however long. I mean, it depends on, you know, how old you are. But yes, you it's a good thing that we've got that loyal readership, but also that means that you can't just do the same thing 5 years later, because they'll remember, you know. So
at the same time, being aware that we've picked up a lot of new readers since, for them that'll be the first time.
It might be the first time they've read an interview with Peter Davison or whoever it might be. So
you know, it's a bit of a shock when they do.
Yeah, but also because, of course, this year was a year where we knew there wasn't going to be a series on TV, which is in some ways, you know, tricky because you're, you know, that's obviously, you know, the best way that you can sell magazines is when it's actually on television and you can have a new episode going out every Saturday night, and that obviously gives us a lot of content. But on the other hand, I think there is a real, you know, challenge for us to try and make ourselves the story of the month, because if it's on TV, you're following the lead of the TV show. But when it's not on TV, hopefully you know there's a talking point that comes from the magazine itself. Fingers crossed.
Any other questions?
You changed the amount of pages you got with the 500. Would you think about keeping it the same size, and would you go completely digital eventually?
Well, we did 116 pages for the 500 plus the extra 116, and that was funnily enough, took a bit more time to do it. So I'm not sure I'd want to do that on a regular basis because we are quite a small team.
And we do like to sleep occasionally.
Yeah. But of course, we're always wanting to give the readers as much as we can. So, you know, I think the Tom Baker one was a bit longer than, I think that was 100 rather than the 84. And so, where we can do something extra, then we'll always want to be able to throw more into it.
So the magazine has increased in size, though. Yeah, I mean,
when I started on the magazine, it was 52 pages, and then it went up to 68, and it's been up to 84, and now occasionally 100, even 116. So there is that kind of, you know, funnily enough, the number of people working on it hasn't really changed.
No.
So
it's right. Yeah. Because now they've got a designer half the time, rather than full time. So.
The question about going digital is a good one, because at the moment, far more people still read the actual physical magazine than read it on their iPad or you know, tablet. But that might change. I mean, I think the world is always changing in that way, so you have to kind of keep up with the times and technology. So if it gets to the point, I mean, I'm a traditionist, so I want my actual collection and keep them on my shelf. But I don't know. It may well be that in another 20 years, that's not how people read magazines at all. So I think for the time being, it's good to have the option, but these decisions are always going to be, you know, based on the market and business reasons.
Now you're going through a process where it's 50 years of this and 50 years of that. It's the Cyber Month at the moment. Presumably there's going to be something big for the Trout. But how do you go throughout the process of, you've sort of celebrated something so many times over so many years. How do you sit down and sort of come up with new ideas for celebrating such a big anniversary? Because that's now going to happen gradually. We're going to get
50 years of everything. Yeah, right. Every year will be 50 years of something. 50 years of the fish people.
Looking forward to it. Yeah, that will be a good one. Very nice. I think in the case of 50 years of Troughton, and we're quite lucky because of course there's this new Power of the Daleks animation coming up. So that's something that we'll be able to get a good angle on and focus on. So we don't often look just at 50 years of something in isolation, but we often see what else is going on and what everyone else is using to celebrate that particular anniversary. I think when we did the TV movie issue.
We did 20 years of the TV movie earlier in the year. And that was sort of a bit of an accident in a way, because we weren't planning to do a big 20 years of the TV movie issue. I think, what was the first thing
Eric Roberts.
One of my writers said, oh, I think we can get an interview with Eric Roberts. And I thought, great, you know, he's I don't think he'd really, I mean, he has done some interviews with it, but I don't think we've done a more in-depth. And then Yuki So was doing his book. Yeah. And then, I think there was something else happened.
Gordon
Tipple.
Gordon Tipple.
Nobody had ever spoken to Gordon Tipple before, the old master. So we thought this is turning into a theme, and suddenly we've got Daphne Ashman. Let's talk to Paul McGann and make it a whole issue. So I think there is that sort of thing that when a lot of time has passed, you know, you do get a different reaction from people. I think that's always going to be the truth, that people reflect on it and look back at things in a different way to the way they do at the time. So I think people like the frankness and the candor at times. It doesn't mean, you know, slagging everything off or anything like that, but I think there is just a different approach that you can have when time has passed. I mean, people tell me that they've enjoyed the Davison interview, but he was particularly candid about certain things I'd never really heard him talk about before. So I think it's just asking the right questions and yeah. knowing what has been said before so that you can offer something new. Does that answer the question?
Definitely.
I can't remember what the question was. I just started talking.
Yes.
You've talked about how looking back at things from 50 years on, or even less time than that, enables you to ask your interviewees to be candid about events that took place in the past. So far as the current series is concerned, clearly you have a license with the BBC, which you don't want to prejudice. To what extent does that license enable you to be objective and critical of the new series? To what extent do you have to be, does that inform the extent to which you're able to approach the new series and your views of it?
Well, as far as interviewees are concerned, I think a lot of the time they're probably self-censoring. So if we're interviewing someone like Stephen Moffat or Brian Minchin or any of the actors, they know what they're going to say. If they put it in Doctor Who magazine, it might end up as a tabloid story if they say, oh, actually, you know, I haven't actually talked about it before, but I did have a fling with that guy over there and they were sensational and we were in the monster costume on the TARDIS at the time. So they possibly won't say that. 20 years' time pick up Doctor Who magazine, we just have some terrific revelations, don't they? As far as the reviews are concerned, we're really very, very lucky. I think we're in a pretty much unique position insofar as although we're licensed, Cardiff don't want to see our reviews at all. And they will not they're necessarily happy, well, but they're happy
well,
to
look,
see.
I mean, the thing with the criticism, if that's what we're getting at, and that applies to things like reviews pages and letters pages. You know, opinion is good, because we all have opinions about, you know, and they don't always agree either. So my reviewer's opinion, Graham, when he sees an episode, he always phones me up and we have a little chat about it and we compare notes as to what we vote for. But in the end, he goes away and writes what he wants to write about it. So he's always, you know, it's always going to be his own feeling about it. Obviously, if he was saying, look, I don't like any of the episodes, you kind of think, well, maybe you're the wrong person. Because you've got to be someone who actually generally enjoys watching Doctor Who, otherwise, you know, why are you doing it? But both Russell and Stephen have been very supportive in saying, well, look, you've got to say something interesting. You've got to be able to do that. So, you know, we've had episodes which certainly haven't gone down as well. But then with some of the readers, they'll say, but that was the one I really liked. You know, we've certainly had people writing in about the Rings of Akaten saying that was their favourite of the series,
yeah.
But that wasn't one that we'd really given a particularly, you know,
favourable
review of. But you know, I think you've got to do that. Otherwise, you know, again, why are you bothering?
Yeah, I think it's true that the majority of people who read the magazine do actually like.
Well, I think and but people do love disagreeing with opinions
and then it's true on our letters page. We're very happy to print letters which are critical.
Critical of anything. Because, yeah. I mean, you know, I think there's a letter in the latest one which says they really didn't like the Peter Davison interview, but we had lots
of
people who said they really did like it. And so I'm not going to say, well, we shouldn't print the one that said they didn't like it, because, you know, you've got to be honest about that.
We try and offer a balanced view of the letters that we actually get in, so it does reflect our readers.
You can't print every letter, but you try and make it sort of reflective of the opinions that you actually get.
Yeah.
But again, sometimes people sort of say, oh, you haven't printed a letter saying such and such. I said, well, we didn't receive a letter saying that. You know, send one in.
It's hard to print it non-libelous, that's fantastic.
Yeah, send something in that's you know, we want to print, and it's worth, you know, a point worth making.
Any other questions? Yes.
I was ever so happy with my stickers.
The 500 is
which was your favourite sticker? Was it the Paul Cornell?
I don't know. they're so lovely. I mean, I know it's more a thing you get on kids' magazines with tags. but have you thought of doing more things? Maybe for Christmas we could have, like, you know, the really cheapo plastic tat rulers. I like those.
It's funny. I did wonder with the stickers, because obviously Can I tell you why we did the stickers, first of all? Everyone here saw the 500th issue, but we did a little sticker sheet with just very silly things on it. I mean, it was, what did we have there?
The Enuresis advert.
The bed wetting advert, and the flying head of Paul Cornell, Mr. Clopper, and...
Oh, Mr. Bellamy, the liquid
Mr. Bellamy from issue one. Yeah, we just put any old tap that we could think of, which would hopefully just make people laugh, because a lot of this is just, you know, if you can raise a smile over this, you know, that's kind of you know what you want to do with a magazine. So, but we did that because, you know, it was a laugh, but also because we were doing the 500th issue in the style of the first issue. What we really wanted to have was transfers, but nobody made them anymore, or at least not for, you know, in quite that form and for a price we could do. So, and because I wanted to have then the backgrounds to put them on, so it kind of all grew from that level. If we're going to have the you know the monstery things or you know whatever they were,
the panorama
thing, yeah. That we would have to do that. And if we could, so it all kind of grew from there. But I'd love to do you know more sort of silly things. I think you know more silliness is good, really. I keep wanting to get Sorbad back to do the space-time telegraph, but yeah. he's sort of in retirement a bit at the moment.
He is.
But yeah, maybe
probably
we read
just
more.
As well.
Well, maybe. But yeah, I'd like to do that. Maybe we could ask if we could do. We haven't worked out what we're doing for Christmas from that point of view yet. So if stickers and things are popular, then maybe
we'll
maybe
you think.
Well, Doctor Who Adventures quite often did as a freebie a cheap kind of stationery set.
Yeah.
So you'd get a ruler, and sometimes there was a little tin to put pencils in. And I actually bought quite a lot of Doctor Who Adventures for the present on the front.
Yeah.
So I just think it is a fun thing, and it.
We'll have a word with our marketing people about what we can do, because I mean the nice thing with Doctor Who magazines, we don't, unlike the children's magazines, they have to have a gift on the front, otherwise the shop won't stock it. So that is just with all children's magazines, they have to have that. So sometimes they're kind of, you know, the gifts are better than others, shall we say. But with Doctor Who magazine, obviously we know it's stuck in a different part of the shop. And it's something which people are primarily buying for the magazine rather than the gift. So although it's nice doing, you know, some extra things now and again, we don't have to depend on it. But we are looking for sort of different ideas for things we could do for that, because we do posters and things. But I think because we've got such a wide age range as well. I mean, you know, we get 11 and 12 year olds. Not a huge number, but some 11 and 12 year olds. Writing about, I mean, I think it's more for older teenagers and adults, and that can go right up to, you know, people in their 90s. So, maybe we'll sort of see what we'll do a poll and see what's popular.
What about a facsimile of the Trout and Lolly?
Fridge magnets.
That sounds pretty good.
I'm not sure we could give away an actual lolly, though, because it would melt.
Fridge magnets.
Yeah.
You
can
get sheets of cheap fridge magnet
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah.
They give those away.
I think we're going to have a word with our marketing people, because, of course, you know, they're the ones who sort of tell us how much these things cost, and then they sort of look sad and go. would you pay extra to have all of this tat on the front? I don't know.
There would be some fridge magnets.
Yeah,
fridge
magnets are kind of, they were really in vogue. I remember I suspected quite a few fridge magnets and things like that at one point. But I don't, are they still fashionable, or?
We shall give that some thought.
We'll give it some thought, yeah.
Any other questions? Yes.
Any plans to bring new artists into the comic strip?
Yes.
Yes, actually, next issue.
Yeah.
Yeah, funnily enough. Yeah. Was that because you knew that was going to happen? You just wanted us to take
it? No, it's asked because Martin Geraghty and Mike Collins' styles are very similar.
Yes, well, they both have quite a sort of realistic style, where someone like Roger Langridge has a very caricatured kind of style, and Adrian has quite an angular kind of...
You've got John Ross in the latest issue.
John Ross is in the latest issue. But we do have an artist called Stas Johnson,
who's
never done Doctor Who magazine before, and he's doing the next comic.
But what is that
story? He's obviously done lots of other stuff, but so it's interesting that, because obviously Titan do the Doctor Who comics line, and very good they are too, from what I see. But of course they do quite a lot of different titles with different doctors, and so they have a lot more comics that they put out. Whereas we have one strip each issue, so that's 13 per year, and obviously the stories might be four parts. So actually, by the time we've done one with Martin, one with Mike, one with Adrian, perhaps one with John Ross, you know, you kind of think, well, we've done a year's worth, you know. I mean, I love having different types of artwork in the magazine, you know, whether it's the Time team or whether it's, you know, Ben Morris did those illustrations to go with Russell's column off, and so on. But it's always nice, isn't it, to have sort of something where, you know, we've seen the photos a million times, but, you know, we can get something different from an artist. So, yeah, I mean, and I'm always happy to look at new artists that come in, but it's, you know, there's a lot of competition as well, so... There will be new artists.
You're right with the number of strips that we do, though. It is a frustration sometimes that we only do have these 13 issues a year with 12-page strip. I mean, I remember particularly when Donna came on board, and she was in the strip just for those...
I think we had Donna in the comic for about five issues.
Yeah, because only three stories.
Yeah, but Long Tally, of course, she was one season, wasn't it? She came in and was gone. So, yeah, it's not actually that.
No, so the introductory story, and then it was a very sad Christmassy leaving story.
Yeah. But yes, more new artists is a good, because of course we want new people coming in. You know, we do have quite an established team of writers and artists, and you always tend to use people that you know can do it, you know, so, but at the same time you do want to have, you know, new talent. And,
so how do you get new talent for Doctor Who magazine then, Tom? Where do you find
People do send in examples of their work, and, you know, sometimes it's just the thing you were looking for, you know.
Yeah.
So, it's a little while. I can't remember when Jamie Lemon sent in his Doctor Who strip for the first time. He just sent it in as an example of something he did, and we were just looking at the time for a little kind of one panel funny thing to put on the letters page. There is a certain amount of luck involved with being, you know, just being in sync with exactly what we were kind of thinking at the time.
And in general, for sort of features and stuff or interviews,
well, again,
people come on board.
Yeah, I mean, Chris Dring is a good example of a writer, because he had seen the article we did about video games, the one about the DVDs, and he suggested an article about the history of video games, and he was a real expert on that, and had, you know, he knew how to get in touch with all the people that knew about that, so he was kind of clearly a good writer. We should be sore from his other work that he'd done, but also knew the people to do. So it was, you kind of needed both things to go, yes, actually, that's exactly what we'd like to run. So, yes, again, you want to have, you know, the credentials and a good idea.
Any other questions? Yes.
The Time team has been running quite a while now. It's gone into its sort of new regeneration with a whole new group.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, because that brought me back to the magazine initially in the early 2000s, I was wondering how it all sort of came about, and if you learnt anything...
You're an original Time team member.
If you learnt anything particularly new or interesting by watching it that way.
It was brilliant watching it from the start in order, and just taking in every single episode. I mean, I had seen probably all of the episodes, not necessarily all the reconstructions, but I'd seen everything at one time or other. But actually seeing how the series evolved and developed was fascinating. And it certainly gave me an appreciation for some stories, which I hadn't had previously. The way it actually came about, I think in 1999 was when the first Time Team was. I was at the Fitzroy Tavern, where lots of fans, I don't know if any of you went to the Fitzroy Tavern back in the 80s or 90s, but lots of fans would meet up there. I knew Alan Barnes, who was assistant editor on the mag at the time, a gadget that was looking to launch the Time Team feature, and I was approached, Jack Rayner was approached, Richard Bignall was approached, and Clayton Hickman was approached. And none of us had anything really to do with Doctor Who at the time.
You didn't really know each other, did you?
We didn't know each other, no. So I think I bumped into Richard once or twice before, but didn't really know any of the others. So when we finally got together, it was just, hello, how are you?
There is something about that, because I think when that feature launched in the late 90s, there was that sort of sense of, you know, the programme had been off air for a long time. So the idea of actually approaching it in that way, of properly going through in order, is something I've never actually done. I've watched all the episodes, but I haven't actually watched them ever, you know, properly through. So I think you do get different things out of it. You know, it's funny with the newer ones, because obviously it's not that long ago, but I think even with sort of, you know, 5 years hindsight, you can have a slightly different impression of that.
I think you had to change the time team eventually, because of course, as you say, it's an all new group now, because by the time we came to the end of our run of the time team, which was I think the TV movie, Clayton had edited Doctor Who magazine and had gone. Richard Bingle had made DVD extras, Jack Rayner was writing best-selling BBC Doctor Who books, and I was assistant editor from the magazine, so it didn't really seem like just for the fans doing that.
Yeah, I mean, we could have carried on with the same team sort of doing that, but it was clear that it wasn't going to quite work for various reasons. I mean, I know, for example, Clayton was very, very good friends with Gareth Roberts and Russell and people, and just felt, I don't want to be reviewing their work in a sort of public way like that. So I can understand that, because I think sometimes you feel, well, I couldn't say what I wanted to say. So it was even far easier to have people who were new to it. But
I've got 4 minutes left. Sorry, do you have another question?
As a subscriber, then last month I was delighted to have a different cover. I really liked that. I thought that worked really well. And then this month I was a bit frustrated because I didn't get the Cybermen I wanted.
Yes, it's annoying that. I know as a subscriber, when we do the multiple covers, and obviously if we're doing two or sometimes four different covers, then there isn't a way to send out.
Unfortunately, subscriber base won't do requests for covers.
Yeah.
The one thing we can do on the digital edition, if you ever decide to move,
we have put all of them on the iPad.
There.
That's true. I think. It was a nice experiment, sort of try doing a cover just for subscribers, and so we wanted to sort of see if we can get a bit of feedback as to whether people liked that or not. Because although we wouldn't necessarily do it every issue, have doing something a bit different, you know. I think it was quite fun to have the old logo and so on. So if it's popular, let us know, because you know that's the way we sort of find out if
do it
again.
Sorry.
Obviously, there's certain things you can't do, like give away spoilers or directly attack teams that are making it. How much input do the BBC and Cardiff have on you? Do you have to run it by and say?
If it's like about, you know, if we're previewing the episode, I'll send it to Stephen, because he'll want to know that we're not giving away the end of the story. And obviously, you know, we wouldn't do that. That's an extreme example. But they'll have an idea about what they want to say in advance and what they don't. So I think that's only polite and respectful to make sure that we're in line with what they want to say. You know, if there's a character. I mean, I was a bit annoyed last year because I wanted to do a big thing about Davros, because he's in it right from the very start of the episode, but they didn't want to say Davros in advance. So, but I'll respect that, because it's their series. If they don't want to say Davros was in it beforehand, that's fine. But you know, you kind of have to know what their thinking is. So I'll have my idea and I might argue my point, but ultimately it's their show. So.
But in general, they will only take out stuff which they know will be spoilerific.
Yeah.
So,
I think it's mostly common sense, though, isn't it? I mean, you know,
although we don't necessarily know what might be spoilerific or what isn't when we put it in.
Yeah.
Because Tom won't have read necessarily the last few episodes of the series, because they haven't been written yet, and there could be something in the preview which could spoil.
I suppose so. Yeah. I mean, we didn't really have much problem with that, because I think after quite a few years of doing it, you have a sense of what to say in a preview. And I know some fans don't like reading previews at all, you know, because they want to know absolutely nothing. And that's fine. I mean, again, you can't please everybody. Some people want to know more than others, so.
And as mentioned earlier, with the reviews and with the letters page, they don't have a say in that at all. So our reviews and our correspondents can say what they like.
It's only really in terms of, you know, I think it's polite to make sure that they're across things that have, that directly affect them.
Yeah.
But yeah. But we've got to, as I say, it doesn't really come up that often. I did have a little bit of a thing about, can we talk about Davros, and they didn't want us to. So we ran it a couple of issues later when we could talk about Davros. But mostly, it's kind of fine.
Yeah.
It's kind of fine. We're in tune with each other.
And on that note, that's us. We've got to finish. Thank you very much.